You are listening to Teen Connectivity with parent coach Vashti Somerville. This is episode 66, Teens Working for Mental Wellness. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. I'm really excited to have a guest. I have a senior in high school who's graciously offered to come talk to us today. Her name is Maggie Olson, and I have known her family for a really long time and seen her around town since she was a very little girl. And she is a dynamic young woman, and I'm really excited to talk to her today about teens and mental health. She's really become kind of a passionate advocate for mental health for teenagers. And you know, the first time Maggie and I spoke was about a year ago. You know, she came to me. Her mom had me do a little coaching with her. She was really struggling in her junior year. And I remember inviting her to be on the podcast. And I think she just wasn't in a place at that time. And Maggie, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
We ran into each other in a coffee shop over the holidays. And it was just so exciting to me to get to hear about some of the projects that you're working on. And yeah. I just think you're fantastic. And so this conversation is really exciting to me, and you're in a much different place than you were a year ago, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your own mental health journey and sort of, you know, being a teen and the bouts of anxiety and the different things that you've experienced. If you could kind of walk us through that, maybe that'll take us to the point where we can talk about this great, exciting work you're doing now.
Okay. I started having anxiety about 10 years ago, roughly. I had to move schools because of my brother. We both had to switch due to like a teacher conflict or something. And that was when my mom kind of started realizing and seeing that I was having a lot of excess anxiety about things I shouldn't have been having anxiety about. And I started having, like, sleep anxiety. I couldn't sleep without my mom near me. I couldn't spend the night at other people's houses. I started having more social anxiety where I didn't want to meet new people. And if I had to meet new people, I would have a total freak out. And then from there, it became less, what's the word? I don't know. Less so immature, I guess, and more into more
like to adolescent
problems. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it kind of turned into more grown up, quote unquote.
Because problems. You were then leaving upper elementary school,
exactly.
Entering junior high.
And it's not the same feeling anymore. The whole, it just changes. So my anxiety then changed and it became more social anxiety, more I didn't want to meet new people again. I was afraid to have to talk to new people, and I was extremely afraid of what people thought of me, and I was trying to make sure that everyone thought it was cool or not weird or like I'm normal, like don't worry guys. So I was trying really hard like on who I wanted people to see me as, and I cared a lot about what people thought of me instead of what I thought of me, and I think that kind of started like a negative cycle of like body image issues and all of their anxieties based on where I go, what I'm wearing, you know.
Right. And wouldn't you say, okay, so we talk about moving from elementary and you clearly had some probably anxiety that was outside of the what would be considered normal for an elementary student.
Right.
But then you hit junior high and I would say some of what you described most kids are going through, right? And for me, I think that's really hard as a parent to know. When does it cross a line and become excessive and when is it normal? And you and I were talking a little bit before about some things you experienced with shifting friend circles in junior high and you know, zooming out and having some perspective now, you know, every single kid was feeling that.
Right. And it's hard because no one talks about this. When you're in elementary school, I think, and going into junior high, even junior high going into high school, you have all these anxieties, which is normal. Like, that should be recognized that it's a normal thing to experience because you're going to a new school, more people to talk to.
You're changing
teachers.
Classes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a normal reason for people to be anxious. And I think then no one's talking about that, though. So then all these kids think they're the only one who's experiencing this. Like, I must be the only one who's afraid. Like, I don't want to have new teachers. I don't want to see new people. All these kids are thinking this. The exact same thing, yet no one's talking about it. No one's talking about how normal it is to feel this. So then all these kids are getting wound up in their own thoughts. And then,
feeling broken exactly, or sick.
And they feel, and like with me about the whole friends thing, I jumped from multiple friend groups throughout junior high and high school. And it's just, that's how it is. But no one told me that. Like, my mom reassured me, of course, like, you're going to find friends. But it's like, really, mom? Like, are you sure?
Where
really?
Are they? I'm waiting.
Yeah. So it's like, of course, someone told me, but like, no one really, not a school counselor or like the principal or I don't know. I was expecting something, but no one really said anything. It's like, what you're feeling is normal. You're, don't worry. Like, you're going to have a good time. You're going to get past this. Like, it will get better.
Well, and I think you just hit on something really important. I think teaching us as human beings how to sit with our feelings, how to right. feel our feelings and not be scared of them, right. that's more important than the math class.
Oh, well,
you know, and it's like, to me, that should almost be a class for mental
right.
health, mental wellness as you
right.
enter junior high.
And I think that one of the things that's helped me kind of grow and learn from my experience is that I've learned that having anxiety is okay, and it is a part of who I am, and just because I haven't does not, like, it doesn't prohibit me from doing anything that I want to do. And if I am feeling anxious, I realize that, yes, I am feeling anxious, but it's okay, and then, like, trying to fix that thinking into how I can not be so anxious, or
okay.
maybe get behind what's actually happening.
That
so the acceptance is, like, a huge part that I think most people are afraid to do. Because then, going on a little tangent, I think a lot of people are afraid to accept what they're feeling. They're afraid of their emotions. And I think that people don't want to accept the fact that maybe they do have anxiety. Like, I don't want to have anxiety. I don't want to be one of those people. Like, I don't want this to define who I am, which isn't the case at all. Because if you look at how many kids at Boise High School have anxiety, I bet you 80 to 90% of them have it. So it's not an abnormal thing. It's an extremely common thing, especially in teenagers nowadays. So it's not a super weird thing. And I think people are too afraid to accept that maybe I am having anxiety. So instead of trying to accept it and figure out how they can change their thinking or how they can fix the problem, they just ignore it. And then the problem comes back. And it's just a cycle.
I love how you said, let's get beneath it. Let's change our thinking. You said so many important things. So accepting that it exists, working
yeah.
with it. Let's look under the hood. Let's
right.
see what's causing it. So you said several times, changing your thinking.
Yeah.
What are some strategies that have worked for you? And how, walk us through like that process of maybe how you have worked, coached yourself, right? To change
okay.
your own thinking.
Yeah. Well, I haven't really done this for that long because I used to think I could never change my thinking. That was one of the main problems, is that I didn't really think, like, positive reinforcement almost, or, like, telling me, like, no, you are okay. I didn't think that was actually going to do anything. So when my mom, whenever I would have a panic attack, she would just tell me, like, just be, like, take deep breaths, like, calm yourself and just try to realistically think about what's happening. So try to go through the steps and think about what is actually happening. It, are my feelings, not that my feelings valid, but is my anxiety valid right here?
And are the thoughts true?
Exactly. Is the excess worry and thoughts really worth it in this situation?
And are they
situation?
Based in fact, or are they just thoughts?
Exactly. Because I know anxiety, it's the illogical thoughts of something that is going to happen or might happen. And by taking a step back and looking at that and just kind of saying, is this really the truth? I think that was one of the hardest things, but the most important things that allowed me to change. So I kind of had to, it took a long time because I didn't do it. So trying to start kind of took a little bit, but I would just try to think about, let's look at the other side of this. I know with my friends, when there's times where I get really upset or feel really anxious that I'm not invited or something, I just, instead of feeling, oh, they're not including me, they must hate me, or they're mad at me because they didn't include me, I try to like take a step back from the picture and say, well, let's look at the other side. Like, is this really the truth? Like, let's kind of, what are they thinking maybe? Like, really put yourself on, like, the devil's advocate and kind of look at, like, what is everything that they might be thinking so that you can really clearly see maybe they're not trying to exclude
yeah, you,
me,
you flip
know?
The script. You
exactly.
look at other possibilities. You get out of a stuck pattern of you,
right.
like, clinging to, well, this is the one truth.
Right, right. And you kind of just have to look at it from all perspectives, I think. That's what helps me the most. And just by really nitpicking and saying, is this really what they were trying to do? Like,
okay, so you're in your senior year in high school.
Yes.
And these are big concepts. This is great learning and self-discovery. Is there anything that happens in the context of the school system that teaches this, in a health class, in I know so many wonderful school counselors, but they're swamped. And I don't think they get a lot of support maybe in creating programs that would maybe support curriculum like this. So what has there been any sort of formal training in your school journey within the school system that talked about concepts like this? Like, flipping the script, changing your thinking, getting beneath your anxiety, anything that's formal?
Well, yeah. Well, I know I'm one of those kids that has, likes to have a lot of relationships with my teachers. So I've had teachers tell me that kind of personally. Like, if I'm having an issue, they kind of try to tell me to, like, look back, like, flip the script, you know?
But informally.
But formally, yeah.
Informally. Like, informally, the teachers, this was just, like,
personal. A conversation, like, having a personal conversation with a teacher. Formally, though, we have a mindfulness class at Boise taught by the school nurse. And that's, I asked her what that was about. And it's, I think it's about accepting your feelings, accepting where you are, accepting if you are sad or if you're happy, just understanding those feelings and then moving forward.
And this is a class anyone can sign up for credit?
Okay, any sophomores, juniors, or seniors. I don't think a lot of kids have signed up because I don't think the advertisement of this class has been good.
So it's a new class.
It's a new class. I think it just started this year, so it's extremely new.
Do you think the demand and the increase in kids experiencing mental health crisis has led to the creation of a class like
this? Oh, for sure. I don't know if this class, I mean, when I was talking to the school nurse, I think it's a really good start. No offense to the class. I think it's a really cool thing. But I know for me, when I was really struggling, it didn't seem, it was more of like kind of trying to change negative into positives. So whatever was negative, let's try to flip it into a positive. And I just think, though, when you're in such a low place, it's you cannot flip it. It's just too hard.
You're stuck. You're paralyzed.
You're in a hole and you can't get out. And so by just saying like, oh, let's just change the mindset, that's like the disconnect. Like, you can't do that. You can't just tell me, someone who is very, really depressed, to just change my mindset. That's not how it works. So I think as good as this is, like the class, I just think it's like a bandage over a huge hole. And I don't think it's really trying to solve the problem.
So that leads me to this question. You know, adults can't just say, oh, come on, look at the bright side. Right. I did your mindset. Like, when someone is paralyzed with depression, that doesn't work. So, you know, what do adults need to know to better help all these kids experiencing these crises? Like, from your perspective, where are the adults feeling? You know, what are some of these things? I know it's a process. There's no quick fix.
Right.
But when you know, teachers or parents are encountering kids that are paralyzed by their depression or anxiety, from your perspective, what is the best that we can do and that we can offer?
I think to start, once again, understanding and accepting our feelings, because I know a lot of kids in my school, we feel that our anxiety is just kind of being overlooked and seen as, you're okay. Like, these are unrealistic. You know, these aren't real things that you should be worrying about, when it's like, but let's look at everything that's pressuring me. Like, that's not a true statement. There are so many things that high schoolers and teenagers are struggling with that I think people are overlooking and saying this isn't a big deal when it really is. So I think the first part is accepting and realizing your feelings and anxiety is valid. I think that high schoolers have a million reasons of why they're anxious and depressed. And especially at Boise High, the academic pressure is extremely rigorous. So we have all this pressure about what Boise High's image should be, our peers who are constantly competing against each other, people's parents are pressuring them. Like, there's a whole bunch of, like, outside factors that are affecting this that I think people are just saying, that's not right.
Well, and, you know, and I think there's a handful of people that are just like, come on, buck up. It's not that bad. And I think this goes back to that thought of there's normal levels of anxiety that just come with growing up.
Exactly.
And then there's times when it crosses a line, and there are societal and cultural things that I talk about a lot on this podcast that people need to understand are really, really big for teens today, and that it's really hard to be a teen today. You know, you've got incredible pressures, to, you know, it's a competitive world.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So it's like, you feel like, oh my goodness, I got a B. I've shut all these doors, right?
Right.
And then there's, we talked a little bit before the interview about the increase in drug culture, substance abuse,
right.
You know, and what's the root cause of that?
Right.
And we talked about active shooter drills. And there's a lot of things going on that are pretty big.
And I think that adults are kind of misunderstanding how big those concepts are. I don't think... The whole school shooting thing, I know everyone thinks, yeah, that's so scary. But when you are having to practice school shooter drills, it feels real. It doesn't feel like it's a drill. And the thought of having a school shooter, it's realistic. And we were talking about that. It's a realistic thing to happen. Mm-hmm. And you never think it's going to be you, and then it can be you.
Well, that's the difference between maybe the sort of bomb shelter drills right. of the 50s. You know, those were scary, but those weren't happening every the actual bombings weren't happening every 2 weeks. Or, you know, we have this culture of shootings happening so often that, of course, these drills feel real.
Exactly.
And kids wonder, am I safe at school?
Right.
And that's terrifying.
Exactly. And then if you have a bad home life, then you don't feel safe at school or at home, you know? And mm-hmm. then that's why I don't think people are really understanding. Like, there are a lot of things that are extremely serious that are causing us to have anxiety that are then being downplayed.
Right. And I think in general, you know, just my interaction with my own daughters and so many teens, a lot of teens do feel somewhat hopeless about their future. I think the environment of competition, and then also just the big problems in the world, climate change. I think a lot of kids have climate change anxiety, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
and wondering what their future is like. And I, you know, I want to flip the script on that because I don't want to just leave people feeling really down after this episode. So I, you know, what's your reframe for this type of thing, and what brings you hope? What brings you sort of like lights you on fire and says, you know what, there are still a lot of good in this world and this is what I want to do. What does that for you, Maggie?
It's hard for me to say because I have been in that place of no hope for so long. Like, I'm kind of still in that phase. Like you said, the whole climate thing is horrifying. So it's hard to feel like there is hope when you think your whole world is going to be gone before you make it to whatever age, you know. But I think for me, one of the things that has helped me kind of be more positive and helped me kind of, you know, lit a fire under me was this whole talk about mental health and also sexual assault, but mental health, really. I know firsthand a lot of people who deal with mental health issues who don't know what to do, who are stuck. And the fact that high school is such a hard time for kids already, to add in the increase of anxieties that we were just talking about, can just make your experience hell, like complete hell. And I think in the school system, there's not enough being done to help kids. And the fact that it's being downplayed as something that it's not that major, that it's, quote, not that major, I think that really irritates me. And I'm like full force ready to change that. And I think that's what really makes me like, gives me hope, I guess.
Right. And at the end of the day, what we can really control is just really, we have a circle of influence, right? We have a circle of concern, as Stephen Covey would say, and those are the big things that we don't have a lot of control over.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of control over some of the small things. And one of those being, can I just make someone's day a little easier, or a little better, right?
Right. And I think that I just think that there's such a lack of kindness right now. And I don't see... I get competition. I'm a naturally competitive person, personally. But I think we just all need to be nicer to each other. And I think, especially through my whole journey, I've had my share of bad days where having someone just say something nice to me, or instead of having a mean something mean being said at me, it just completely changes your day. So trying to, like, just really understand everyone is going through their own thing, and like trying to be as nice as you can to people, like, that's a huge thing in making people's day or not.
Well, and I don't think anyone would argue with you, like, the culture isn't one of kindness
right.
On the national stage, you know,
right.
Just look at the news, look at politics. What's it like in the halls of high school? Is it a culture of kindness there? What's that like?
Well, I mean, naturally in high school, the upperclassmen don't really like the underclassmen. So, I mean, I think naturally if a sophomore were to see a senior in a hall, they might be like a little bit more timid. I think Boise could do a better job of promoting kindness. I don't think there's a lot. Actually, I don't think there's anything really being done, if I'm being honest. I don't really go out of my way to, like, say hi to any new people. Or if I see, like, I think if someone were to see someone, like, drop their books or something, they wouldn't just walk away, you know? Like, we're nice. We're going to hold the door open. Like, I don't, simple things. Like, very basic things. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're really doing that much to, like, make someone's day better. You know?
So you think there could be a greater focus on that?
I mean, yeah. There can be a greater focus on kindness anytime. No matter how much you're giving, there can always be more. So I think that we're definitely lacking in, like, the whole, let's really make sure everyone feels welcome and, like, good here. And I think that's
happening. You're working on a project that might influence that a little bit called The Brick House. I'm so excited. Yeah. And tell me about that.
So my econ teacher, Sandy Waters.
Love her. She's amazing.
She's my favorite. I think she's been teaching, I don't even know how long, but she is one of the best people I know. We get along great. So I always, like, I talk to her a lot of the times. And when I kind of started talking to her about, I was upset with the school because over the past 2 years, maybe we've had a handful of kids, 2 or 3 years older than me, pass away due to drug overdoses and suicides, which are linked to anxiety and depression. I am going to say that right here, right now. Mm-hmm. And when I was talking to her about that, I was so upset that nothing was being changed. We kind of just started getting to talking because she had those kids. She had these students. She's a really down-to-earth person, so she talks to, like, everyone. So she knows these kids. This isn't just, like, a stranger to her. She's been through it with them.
Absolutely, and there's almost no one I know today who has not been impacted by a death by suicide of a young person even. So it's devastating.
So we kind of got to talking, and she has a community leadership class. And this year, I think she really wanted to make a change. And so there's a house on 7th and Franklin that is owned by the, what is it?
I think it's the Idaho Federation of Families for Children's Mental Health. It's a very long title, but that's it.
I can never remember it, but that is it. And they told us that we could use their house, like, as a resource. So basically what's happening is after school, I think every day from 3:30 to 5:30, the Brick House is going to be open. That's what it's called. And it's going to be a place for kids to hang out and relax, chill, you know. And one of the other things is that our library, which is so weird, our school library closes at 3:30. So kids, like, they kind of go there to hang out for a little bit, and they can't because it gets closed 20 minutes after school gets out. They have nowhere to go. So the Brick House offers another place for people to go if they just can't go home at that time, or if they need to study more and they can't study at home. It offers a place. We're going to have, like, a little homework hall and iPads or computers, one of the two. And it also is a mental health resource. And we're going to have, I think, the two people who kind of run it, like the clinic, they stay there and they have a whole bunch. They have books. They have articles. They have their own expertise.
And they have a network they can tap kids into if a kid comes forward and needs something specific.
And we're going to make it about kind of advertising it as a place where if you need help, this is where you go. Because at Boise, we don't have that. We don't have that at all. And the Brick House in Boise, they're separate organizations. So we're allowed to feel whatever we want at the Brick House, which is itself an amazing thing. So if we're having a problem, and at Boise, if I was having a problem, Boise High, I wouldn't know really where to go to. The counselors are so overworked. They are mainly focused on academic things, such as schedule changes, teacher problems, I don't even know, other things.
Well, and I think that people have a misconception about school counselors and think that they're different than mental health professionals. And they are mental health professionals, but unfortunately they're their student load is pretty high. Right. I mean, it's 500 or 600 kids per counselor or something like that. And they're responsible for registration, transcript things, you know, managing this advanced opportunities money that we have in the state of Idaho.
Right. And so they have so much to do.
Right. And I've been a big advocate. I've really wanted to speak up on their behalf. And I have written some letters and said, you know, in this age of so many kids suffering and the age of school shootings and all these problems that we're facing, we need the counselors to be able to focus on the culture of mental wellness and not paper pushing. So I'm going to continue to advocate for them because there are so many talented school counselors, and I just have to give that shout out, and hopefully they'll be allowed to do what they're really, really great at, and some of this other workload can be given to some different professionals.
Right. And I think that's kind of going off for a second. I think that's one of the things that irritates me the most, is that despite all of the problems that we as like not necessarily only Boise High, but as like a nation that we're having, I don't understand why we're still focused so much on the paper pushing then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, shouldn't there be a turning point when we really say, so what's more important, our academics or our students' mental health? And they're still choosing the academics. Like, that's what I really don't understand. Like, I feel like there should then be a stopping point in saying, we need a counselor. And we need a counselor at Boise High who is not about the paper pushing. We need someone who is there for the kids, who, not just in times of emergency, at this second in time. We need a counselor who's there all the time and has an open schedule for kids who are needing help. Because, unfortunately, we're on the counselor's time. And I've had friends who have said to the counselors or written a slip that says, like, I need to talk this second. And they still don't get into that second.
Because there's probably 10 other kids that needed to talk that second.
Exactly.
And a bunch of other pressing things.
So what if one of those kids that needed to talk the second was seriously suicidal? And you didn't have time for them. So then they decide to do whatever.
And maybe that was the only way the kid knew to ask for help.
Exactly.
School counselor.
Exactly. And that's what I don't understand. But then the brick house, what I'm really going to try to push to do, and I think this is the plan, is to automatically state that this is a resource for mental health, that if you don't know where to go, this is where you go. Because obviously Boise High is not the place to go. The brick house should be now. Like, there are people who have dealt with experience, me and others, who will be there, that if you just need to talk, we can just talk, have a conversation. There are professionals there who can get you in touch with a counselor if you need to talk to a professional.
Right, kind of like the gateway to a whole vast network of services that might exist in the community.
Exactly, that we just don't have at Boise High. So I think the brick house is super cool because it's not only just a place to hang out, but then it'll be, if you need help or want help, then we have these resources here for you that are open to your use, that we are available really whenever you need. And I think that's just like one of the most important things.
I love this concept. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about it, but you said something really important about when is that focus going to shift to really, really making sure that kids' mental health needs are addressed, you know, and not that that's 100% the school's issue.
No.
It's like societal, but
when
will that shift? And I think, you know, if you have a kid that can do high-level math, but they don't know how to manage their feelings and they're really at risk of self-harm or different things, who cares about the math? You know, at some point, I think if we looked at equipping, you know, really the way to launch kids into adulthood is to make sure that they are emotionally literate, that they know how to manage their emotions, they know how to tap into their internal resources, their internal power, and it's you know, because so much is external validation through your likes on social media, validation through your report card, you know, these are external things, when the focus really needs to be where is the internal validation that happens on an individual level, and really teaching human beings how to do that.
Well, and I think that's a huge problem. I don't know why we're not focusing on that more, because high school isn't really preparing us for anything.
It would change the world.
Exactly. I mean, kids, if I didn't have the resources that I did now, and I had something happen to me within the next 1 to 2 years that really impacted my mental health, I wouldn't know what to do. I wouldn't. And there are, I bet, so many kids who are that right now.
And maybe they don't have parents that can talk to her. Maybe their parents wouldn't know. Like, your mom's really tapped into community and resources, so you have her as a resource. But what about, you know, there's probably parents that wouldn't even know what to do.
Exactly.
And so knowing about something like Brick House, that's kind of a cool thing. Like, well, hey, we've got Brick House for
if you
teams.
Don't know what to do, like, you can come over here and, like, you know, like, here's something that we can help you with.
I love that. So when is that going to open?
Well, we finished painting it a few days ago, or we're about to finish painting it. But I think it's going to be either mid-January or February. So we just have to get some furniture, get some stuff rocking and rolling, and then we'll be good to go.
So will it be peer staffed? Also, will there be peers, like leaders like yourself, that will sort of be a part of the day-to-day operations?
Yeah. So in the class community leadership, since the Brick House is run through us, the people who are in that class, I think we're going to do volunteer shifts. So we'll, however many times you can per week. And I mean, it's only open 2 hours after school, so it's not
right.
taking a huge load out of your day or whatever, but we're going to do like volunteer shifts, and we're just kind of going to hang out there and monitor is what I meant. See what's, if anything is going wrong or,
yeah.
especially in the first few weeks, we need to like see maybe what needs to be fixed or.
Well, and it's also, let's not overlook like the most simple, yet most powerful aspect of a place like this. It's a place for connection. It's a place
right.
for human face-to-face right. connection.
And I think if like the good thing is if I walk around and I'm seeing someone maybe just sitting on a couch by themselves, that's kind of like a sign in itself. If we're in this like whole social connective place, why isn't someone kind of, you know, being social? Or maybe they're doing their own thing, but I think kind of having people there to look out for signs of anxiety or depression in kids, I think that's also going to be a really cool tool. I think the one-on-one aspect is also extremely important. I know I do better talking to someone one-on-one, especially when they've had that same experience as me. And I think having like these volunteers kind of be able to be that person for someone.
And in some ways, I think kids relate to peers
yes.
in a better way. So having that one-on-one peer, but having these
right.
these peers, this community leadership group of teens also trained to know, hey, this is something that's bigger and that I shouldn't handle on my own. And
right.
knowing how to do that warm handoff to
someone
a professional
else.
There that knows how to tap in. Right.
right. And I think the peer thing is a really important aspect because my original goal for senior year, I wanted to do at Boise a student peer support group. That was my original idea.
Is this your senior project?
No.
Okay.
It's not. But I was going to get a group of kids who I know, like my core four is what it was going to start as. And I had three other people who I know have been through their own experiences, different of mine, might I say. One of my friends is a dancer. And she had anxiety with not knowing if she should stay in dance or not because it was taking such a huge toll on her. She didn't know whether to do it or not. And she had a different side of anxiety that I never had before. So I had this group of kids who I trusted a lot, and I still trust, obviously, but who I really liked and I thought would make a really good group. And I wanted to have, like, a peer support group because I know I can talk easily to adults. I just love talking. So anyone who's willing
so
to talk,
get along, Maggie.
Yeah, anyone who's willing to talk with me, I can go on for hours. So teachers, I just always have been able to have a good connection with. So if I'm having a really bad problem and they're trying to get me to do something in class, I can just be like, I can't right now or else I'm going to break. There are kids, though, who don't do that, who don't have that, who are too shy to speak up, who don't want to address their vulnerabilities in front of a teacher. So they don't say anything. So I think having that support group, and especially older kids, since we are the seniors, saying that I have been exactly where you are, I've literally been in your shoes, it does get better because I am here now. I can tell you about my growth and let me maybe share some ways that have helped me become who I am.
Yeah, and you're validating their feelings and you're also normalizing them so right. that this poor kid that's just stuck in their head isn't thinking, I'm just broken and no exactly. one else is, I'm weird, I'm not right.
And what irritates me the most, I think, is that the conversation about how having anxiety and depression is normal is not happening. Because it is normal. Like I said earlier, 80 to 90% of kids, I'm assuming, have anxiety or depression at Boise High. Maybe not even at Boise High. That might even go for Timberline, Bora, Frank Church. It
might be nationwide.
Exactly, yeah. For all I know. But because of my little bubble, I'm just saying Boise High.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, I bet you could ask every single teacher there if our kids have anxiety or depression. And they will say yes. Everyone knows it. The administration knows it. The janitors know it. The students know it. Yet the talk about it is not there. So we all know this is happening, yet are continuing to not normalize it, even though it's normal.
Right.
So that whole thing just really irritates me.
And normal yet not normal. You know, there's a normal level, but then there's also, like we've said, there's these really big issues
right.
in society that are, you know, that are really impacting teens. Right. So that's why I love that you have taken on a project, you and a group of your peers, and with the help of this mentor, Miss Waters. This is a really big deal. This is a yeah. big thing that you guys are doing. And so I want to definitely link more information about this in the podcast notes. So I'll reach out to the Federation of Families and I might even reach out to Ms. Waters. And
yeah.
So how is this going to be sanctioned to be advertised through Boise High? Like there, you guys are going to be able to put up some posters
yeah.
come to the Brick House.
Yeah. So I talked to our principal. We can totally do that. I mean, we can't have it be like linked with Boise High, I think for like liability reasons, but also, I know I plan on trying to get, we're going to try to have like not TED Talks, but someone who is, a professional or expertise in a certain area, whether sexual assault, mental health, anything else really talk and sex education, like, and have talks there. Because at Brick House. Because we can't talk about sex at Boise. We're an abstinence-only place, you know? We can't.
That's what the curriculum is?
Yeah, we're abstinence. We're abstinence-only. So our health teacher, like, he tries to do as much as he can, or one of our health teachers tries to do as much as he can to talk about sex, but he can't because we're not supposed to talk about sex. So then linking that then to sexual assault, sex and sexual assault aren't the same thing. Rape and sex aren't the same thing. Yet we can't talk about rape because it's considered sex.
Well, and this could be another tangent, which we probably won't go
right.
completely down this rabbit hole in this interview. But I also think there's an increase in pornography addiction in teens. And I do have some questions as to how that's impacting the number of
right.
Peer-to-peer assaults.
Well, what I think, going back to what we were talking about, the increase in drug usage, like I was saying, I've heard middle schoolers, 14, 13, who are already smoking weed and drinking, these actions are going to just continue throughout high school. I mean, it's not wrong for me to say that people under the influence of alcohol tend to do bad decisions. Whether right. I'm not saying that sexually assault, but you tend to do.
It increases risk for
right.
For sure.
Right. So by having that outside factor of drugs and alcohol impact someone at such a young age and have that and then continue to build up throughout high school, I also, that's not a good mix.
It's well, and let's zoom back again and you look at if it's substance use, if it's pornography viewing, whatever it is, it's a way of kids self-medicating, trying to get out of
right.
their brain, escape some feelings. So it is a mental health issue.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what's the root of wanting to alter your state of being? And that's where I think this concept of the Brick House provides this great opportunity, because the root of a lot of this is seeking connection.
Right.
Connection, better connection to yourself, connection to your community,
right.
connection to, you know, friendships, and connection to a sense of purpose. And that's the really hopeful piece to me, and where I think this is just brilliant. I cannot
yeah.
wait to see how it unfolds.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd be willing to come back maybe and talk to us once this has a little traction and tell
oh,
us
yeah.
how it's going?
Of course. Yeah, I'd love to. It'd be so fun.
You know, and it might be kind of fun to go do a podcast from the Brick House
yeah.
and just kind of just interview kids, talk about the environment, and just
yeah.
sort of, I love that. And I think kids love telling their stories too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it'll be able to have people open up a little bit and not feel so alone. And, like, it's not, I'm not the only one who's feeling this way or felt this way. Like, look at all these people who are here who have felt the way I felt. And, like, now we're able to kind of talk about it and not feel the exact same way.
You are such a dynamic young woman, Maggie, and it's been so fun to reconnect, and I'm so happy to see you in a better place than you were a year ago. You're not saying your life's easy and everything's all fixed, but you feel like you've got these tools and this this way of managing your thoughts, and now you have this purpose and this drive to help others, and I just am so grateful that you came to talk to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Teen Connectivity with Vashti Somerville, parent coach and owner of Family Healing Pathways. For more information on programs and services we offer, please visit www.familyhealingpathways.com.